too bad. How are you, sir?
Hey, good, good. So how's things in Ireland?
It's cold and damp.
Oh, isn't that kind of always the case?
Yeah, but usually this time of year I'm in Spain where it's warm and dry.
Oh, okay.
But unfortunately,
You
we've been
travel,
told
yeah.
try to avoid non-essential travel. In fact, avoid non-essential travel. So,
That makes sense. I hear that a lot of. Hi, Tyne. Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Hi.
I said to Tony, are you reminiscing? You can't go on holidays.
I'm regretting that I cannot go on holidays. Yeah. I was just having a conversation with someone I have booked off 2 weeks at the beginning of August because I had to. And now I'm not entirely sure that I can be bothered because if the weather doesn't improve a little bit, then I cannot see the point.
You
We
usually
have such
go
a nice
to.
springtime, but the summer has been not great.
Yeah.
You usually go to Spain or Europe, parts of Europe?
No, because I won't get insurance.
Oh, I mean, before previous years, you
Oh, yeah. I'd
go
have been
this
in
fashion.
Spain for 4 or 5 weeks,
Oh,
3 to 5 weeks. Enjoy the beach, enjoy the pool, enjoy the beer.
I've just been to Barcelona, which was really neat. The Sagrada and Gaudi and
You're far too cultured, Ben.
yeah, it's interesting to see the world. I've been to 30 countries actually around the world.
It is interesting.
Hey, Joanne. Hey, how are you? All right, let's get started. I'm going to start the
Don't forget
recording
to
here.
press the record, yeah.
Yep. Welcome, everybody, to the Configuration Persistence and C Service meeting for July 17th. So we have some M1 topics we need to hit logistically before that are sort of high priority. And some other people are joining too. Hey, Bruno.
Apparently, we got a green vote yesterday on
Yeah.
322, so
Yeah.
that was good.
Right. And so let's see. For the requirement 322, we are green. And I had gotten some email exchange about the non-functional requirement
I added that
of.
section there, non-functional requirements, based
Yeah.
on the back and forth that we had with
Great.
Swami and
Okay. Excellent. Okay. So that was my thing that they're on about. So yeah, so I think Swami had said that they're working on some non-functional stuff through the other
use cases.
OSAN use case. And maybe just for their edification, we can point to their REQ is 345, I think. Yeah, so that's good. He basically said, they're doing the contribution through the REQ 345, and we'll just note it here. Thanks, Tony, for updating that. Okay.
Yeah, there was a table that Kieran asked me to update as well.
Okay, great. Table.
Yeah, that folks were using in the TSC to do voting on. Let's see if I can dig it up.
That's weird. It should be let me just
Yeah,
edit
it's
here
the
just so.
Guilin impact view per component.
Oh yeah. I know that page. Okay, but hold on me.
Yeah, we needed to be added to the second table. We were in the first table.
Okay. All right.
So I added us under, including, and I turned the CCSDK, including CDS column green. And that seemed to be okay.
Okay, let me see. All right, I'm just gonna put this here. All right, and let me go to that table really quick that you're talking about. I see Powell also joined.
Hello.
Hi, Powell. Hey, how are you? Let me just move just to there. Okay, and let me see. So, what was I looking for? The project per component should be right here. Okay, So you said we need to be moved to another table or something?
No,
or?
No, not moved, added.
Oh, added. Oh.
There were two tables in that. Yeah, and it's the second table. I added this at the bottom.
Here?
No, not. Well, maybe that. Yeah, that is actually somebody. More people came in after me again. Okay, fair enough.
So wait, I'm confused. This is the entry for us, right? Is there another entry for us, or is there the POC entry? There's probably the POC entry somewhere.
No, not the POC entry. There's two. There's two tables on this page.
Okay. Let me zoom out so I can see the tables. Okay. Yeah. Aren't there more than two tables? There's the use cases, the requirements, the non-functional requirements, and the...
It's that non-functional, I added this at the bottom there, that one.
Oh, I see. Got you. Right. Okay, yeah, good. Okay, yes, right.
Apparently they needed us there.
Yes, I see what you mean, yeah, okay.
Right at the very bottom of this table, yeah. It's quite near the bottom of the page.
Okay.
There you go.
I see. As I understand it, that's not how you do this. So let me jump in. So actually I need to do some things for mine as well. And let me show you what I understood. So what I understood was the following. So for example, I'm working on Plug and Play, which is contributing to SO2981, which leads to REQ351, which is right here, which is blah, blah, blah. Let me see what is all this stuff? Oh, Sana, huh? Oh, okay. I see 351, what the heck? Okay. So basically, so is this a link or is this just a text background color green? Okay. So this is how I understand they want us to do this. So basically, I could be wrong. Basically, my plug and play use case is 318, and it's doing a contribution in SO under the story ticket 2981, which is linked to 2049, which is a sub task of 351. But this is the non-functional requirement for PNP, if that makes sense. So I would expect 322 itself isn't a non-functional requirement. It's a functional requirement. Rather, its non-functional requirement is whatever the REQ for, not for O of some PCI, but the thing that O of some PCI is committing to, if that makes sense. So let me see if I can find out what that is.
The code coverage.
Yeah, right. So let me see if I can find out what that is. So they have an unfunctional something probably in SDNC, one of these ones, SDNC 1201 or 12669. Let me see. Let me take a look at these two. So in order for them to contribute to SDNC, they should also have something for non-functional requirements. I don't know. So what I would suggest is you delete that row. And because we're a functional requirement, not a non-functional requirement. So if you don't mind, I'm going to delete this row. What we need to find out is the following. So O of San PCI, let me see, maybe we can just search on where they if they've updated it as well. 345, I believe, is the O of San PCI use case. And so if we search, they should have containers, most question. Is this, that's OOF, okay. So see, these are their non-functional requirement contributions to OOF. These are the actual non-functional requirements, containers must crash, blah, blah, blah. And let me see, DCAE, because we noticed they also had DCA impact, right? So if we see, they also have DCA stuff. So that's their non-functional things for that.
So they should have something in there for under the CCSDK, including CDS. So they should have
in that column,
they should have a requirement 345 in that
exactly,
one.
Exactly. So,
and then that would cover us. So
exactly.
We just put a comment in there to say this includes.
Or what we can do is we can just, we've already added the comment, which is good, but we can actually add REQ-322.
45.
our thing, 322 as well, under one of these. And that way, when they search the table, they'll see our non-functional requirement is the essentially the exact same thing as 345 for, I would have expected like SDNC, which is where CCSDK is. So maybe we need to go back to Swami and talk about that. So somewhere, okay, so we won't be able to do that here. But do we understand the task, the action item? Let me just go back to the notes here. So what we need to do is, let me go back up to here for R7 now. TSC project proposal. This is actually R8. We're starting to get, okay, let me see how I did this. Okay. Let me just move that out because.
Yeah, we need to have that one as well, or begin it at least.
Yeah. Okay, let me see. Topic description. All right, and actually, so for those of you who don't know, Tony and Joanne and myself, we've also reached out to the requirements subcommittee for a presentation on July 27th, which is a Monday. 2 weeks from now. I think we're pretty much, the presentation is just going to be what we've presented a bazillion times already. It's basically just our project proposal, which we could spend hours presenting. So we're well practiced, I think, in that. So I think that shouldn't be a big deal, but I'm just going to add that to the R8 stuff. And we're well ahead of schedule. I mean, we're like 3 weeks ahead of schedule. We don't have to present it then, but I think we're ready, so might as well.
Get the ball rolling. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So so R7 Guilin development PAC. Okay. Statement PAC. Okay. So let's see. R8 TSC project proposal. Okay. We can also get an early start on this too, but no slicing. Okay, so I think we need to add or sell an item to the either M1 or the interdependency of some PCI, which I think I'll do, which we should have had somewhere. Okay. All right. So. Oh, sun interaction. This REQ 345 here. On functional requirement for CCSDK, SDNC, and the Guilin in this thing. Okay, so that's something we need to finish. So that's kind of an action we need to take on. Okay. I think that's all the main logistics stuff. Oh, wait. Yeah. We also at some point need to fill out the table, which we'll do maybe later.
The functional table. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I started it, but,
I started thinking about it, but then got busy doing other stuff.
Yeah. I think I started it, but, okay. Table in the wiki. Action to contact Swami for NFR impact. Okay, so let's move on to the POX architecture issues list, and I'll let Tony or Twain drive here, so I'll stop sharing.
Twain, why don't you go first? Because I think last week we said we were going to look at the interfaces, but Twain...
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute there.
Yeah, Twain raised a point that before we get to the interfaces, we should have a think, maybe not complete, but think about backward compatibility. So maybe I'll leave the floor to you now, Twain, that you've unmuted.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, sorry. I'm looking for the screen out there, for the button to share my screen. I'm not so familiar with Zoom still.
It's in the middle between join and order.
Yeah, I have it now. No, it's just our different tabs open, you know yourself.
I do.
Screen don't want to share this one, I suppose. Hopefully my bandwidth will give me, won't give me too much problems. You should be seeing my screen shortly.
Yeah, I can see the screen. If your voice breaks up, then I'll share for you. You can talk.
Okay. Let me just go back now to the, we need to go one level up to the decisions. So we, on that high level, issues decisions as assumption.
Oh, he's kind of breaking up pretty hard.
Yeah, whenever the screen changes.
Yeah.
Twine, are you there?
Okay, when the screen is stable, you can hear me okay, yeah?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
I am still here.
Okay, good.
You can't hear me now?
We can hear you fine.
Maybe it's better if you share, Tony, then, because I don't seem to have the bandwidth to do both.
Okay.
Okay, so as long as don't move the screen, you can hear me. Move the screen for now, Tony, and if I need to move, then maybe you get ready for it. Okay. So we basically, are these in the right order now? Interface tabs, backward compatibility, yeah. So basically, we more or less we're done with the first decision. We're going for option C with the loose coupling. And then Tony, you'd like to go on to the interface style and the data representation. We started talking about that last week. But before we do that, I think we need to formally agree about the backward compatibility with the ConfigDB. So I did a quick analysis. I'll open the page.
Yeah, you'll break up for a second, but then it'll be grand again.
Okay. So basically, I did a short description of the current interface that's being used, which is basically a hard-coded interface very specific for specific objects. So for every object, there is a maybe enlarge the Swagger preview for a minute. Hopefully that will work.
Oh yeah, it's working fine. It's just making your voice go funny.
Okay, so as you can see here, it's very much now it's a very small interface as it is at the moment, and it's hard coded for the objects that exist. So this is not really going to work with our model driven approach. So basically, given this fact and a few other facts, I think I've given this to me here. I might as well remind myself now.
We're going to pause the talk for a second.
So we're proposing no backward compatibility. Okay. So we're proposing no backward compatibility because of the hard-coded nature of the current interface, the presentation that we want to use, which we want to discuss next, which is probably going to be some kind of generic formats, as we've been talking about, what we call glorified maps. The interface methods at the moment, like there's an interface method called insert data, which seem to a generic method, but it isn't. Again, it's expecting a very specific set of data, a list of cells in this case. So basically, and then finally, it's very small. We only have two object types that are currently being supported. I have an alternative there at the bottom. We can always put a wrapper around the old interface towards the new interface. Or we can just probably recode the existing interface. So basically what we're proposing is just to agree to let use this idea of backward compatibility with the existing ConfigDB interface. So if nobody has any strong objections against that, I hope we can make that decision and then we can move on to the next decision points about the interface style.
So that's open to the floor then for objections. Yep.
The silence is deafening. So
well, when we say no backward compatibility, we mean, no backward compatibility to what?
To the interface that's shown in that Swagger.
My only objection here would be that this is such a small interface that I think something could be coded up for it if need be.
Yeah, that's the alternative that Tuan has mentioned.
Yeah, that's what I have at the bottom there. Just write a little wrapper around it, I suppose, that redirects it to the new.
You mean the existing, right? The existing.
Yes.
Big DB. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So one other issue.
Yeah, go ahead.
One other. I actually came up with a. When I first tried to do a technology demonstration, I actually tried to match this API. And one thing to consider is that they exchange JSON rather than XML. So that might be an issue in backward compatibility.
So their payload is JSON, not XML.
Yeah, I don't think it's really that big a deal, but that's yet another issue.
Yep, fair enough.
The other thing I was thinking of too was when we might, for CMPS 2.0 in the next release.
Okay.
Do we need to migrate? Aren't we going to also need to, if we're not backward compatible, then we need to also have an item about making sure software that depends on this stuff doesn't break, right?
Correct.
Or updating, yeah. Rather updating the software, not break, but you know, same thing, yeah.
Yeah. And that's why the alternative comes into play. Either we break existing functionality and we ask them to migrate themselves, we take the impact to migrate the existing applications to use the new interface, or we put in place this alternative. But those are the consequences of not preserving backwards compatibility. So we do have ways in which we can work around in terms of impacting the other components, or providing an interface compatibility layer specifically for them.
Yeah, and I'm fine with no backwards compatibility. We just have to be kind to people who are potential customers, right? That we don't leave them in the dark or in the dust.
We probably need to consider a migration strategy, then work that out a bit and have something
to deal with that.
So I think the decision is clear that we're not going to be tied to this format of an interface. That decision is clear, but it's also got riders, for want of a better word, that we must also manage either the migration or the interface compatibility component. So either we in CPS will provide an interface compatibility component for this small interface, or we as part of the project will ensure that we have resources to impact the other components to make the migration to the new interface. And I think that's part of the decision.
Yeah, exactly.
If we mark that down as part of the decision on this page, then we can close it and move on. I think there was broad agreement on that. I guess we don't have a formal vote like they do in the TSE, but...
yeah.
Okay. I'm happy, Tuan. Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. Yep.
Okay. So
you want to start sharing then, Tony, for the next decisions?
Okay, I can do that. Let me see if I can bring it up first. Whoops. Issues, decisions, and assumptions. And then I can go back to Zoom, share the screen. Not that one. This one. Hopefully you can now see my screen.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. So the next two issues go together, the interface style and the data representation. So if I just take them one at a time and we can conclude together, or if people really like an approach, we can, and there are other aspects to the interface that we still have to look at as well. I just don't have them listed here yet. Okay, so the interface style, the first one. Now, I'm looking internally first, but we also have to look at how this would be represented on a REST endpoint, because the expectation is that the configuration and persistency service will expose a REST interface to the rest of ONAP. But internally and for performance reasons, and yes, at the moment, I'm starting with Java, because that's developers we have primarily from the Ericsson side. And I like Java. So there are two main styles of interface. And it comes down to the type of encapsulation that you want to have. So I thought it best to try and explain it with a little bit of pseudo Java code. So here we have a configuration of persistency service, and we want to get a root object of some description. And we use a UUID to identify that root object. and then you can print out that root object to see that you have it. And then we want to get children, but we get the children on the root object. We don't get them on the CPS object. We get it on the object that was returned from the first call. So this is a parent and it has children. So we're able to call get children on it. And then similarly, when we have, when we get the objects back, we're able to call get parents on those objects. So this is a simple parent-child relationship and how that would, how this style would work, would look. So the methods, get children, get parents, are actually on the object. So this is very much an object-orientated approach. So that's option A. And option B is where we actually pass an identifier in and all methods are actually on the CPS interface. So the CPS, again, you start with the get root object. But then in order to get the children of that, you say CPS.getChildren. And then you pass in the object identifier or the object, which has an which includes an identifier to the object that you're interested in. And then similarly, when you want to get the parents of those, you use CPS.getParent of the child object.
So what's meant here by parent versus child?
It's simply a hierarchical relationship.
Yeah. What's the nature of this?
It's a leaf. In Yang, it would be a reference.
And Yang would be a...
I guess it would be a reference. It would be a reference or a containment relationship.
Okay, so for every container, you might actually be making this call.
Yes, that's the next... that's absolutely, that's the next... I did say they were related. It's a really good question, Ted. And this and the next issue are very closely related, as are all interface related.
Yeah, because I have some comments along these about these things. I personally think it'd be much better to treat the document as a document.
Okay, so, I'm going to start taking notes on this one.
So basically, after you fetch a document, and you definitely need some reasonable interface for the document, why write anything else? Why do you have to do these things? There's plenty of open source document manipulation libraries. And yeah. Actually, let me tell you my preferred way of working with the document. Even if I get something in XML, I convert it to JSON within Python, and then I operate on it directly in Python. So there's many, many different ways by which somebody can work on a document. I don't see the need to prescribe any particular method for working on the document. What you want to do is you want to be able to fetch documents. Now, you might want to ask yourself, where are the points in which you're going to be fetching documents? And because some of these documents can be absolutely enormous, potentially.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand who's consuming this, because this would be an application that wants to manipulate data. So this is a little bit somewhere between the REST endpoint that we saw a few minutes ago and what you're saying with just get the document. So to me, this is a bit of a halfway house, because I want to be able to get a utransel from an access node. And I only want to get the utransel from the access node, which is moving into the next. Or maybe I want to get all of the nodes in that object hierarchy down to the utransel. Or I want to get all of the children of the utransel. Or all of the relationships from the utransel. So that's, you're getting into query, and then how you get those objects back. And then because I'm working in Java, I don't necessarily want to have to play around with transforming from XML to something else. I want to have a strongly typed or a reasonably strongly typed Java API that allows me to manipulate that, because that's the programming language and the programming environment that I want to work in.
I also have an objection to that.
I know.
I think it's important to support Java, but basically every time I use Java, I feel like I'm programming with mittens on, and other people feel quite differently.
Yeah. And it gets quite religious and dogmatic on this one. And
in the RIC project, we are supporting, nobody uses Java for some reason, but people use Python, C, C++, Go, and sometimes cobble together shell scripts.
And if you look at some of the projects that I do at home, all of those languages also make a showing as well, depending on what's appropriate. So I don't have an objection to supporting multiple different runtimes, but we have to start somewhere. We have to start somewhere. And the overall design is meant to be language agnostic. But inside in the Java runtime, I want to see objects, not documents. So I hear what you're saying.
I'm a little confused about at what point are you walking up and down a document, at what point you're making fetches to the database.
Okay, so this...
Okay, may I have one question?
Yeah.
Just because I'm wondering for whom is this API? Because similar as previously, I'm thinking about it from the RApps perspective. There is a lot of RApps that need data, that need VES data in the database, and some of them will be in Java, some of them will be in Python. So I won't use this API for sure. I need some contract, REST endpoint that will allow me to get some documents and the data. So it's not API for me. It's not definition for me. So
correct.
Who's gonna use this API?
Okay, so the CPS must provide a REST interface. That's a given. And the data is going to be stored in a database technology. So it has to make some kind of a path from one to the other. I would like to see it doing things like validation in between, in compliance with the model. I would like to see that the database itself doesn't change as a result of having to handle a new model. I would like the interface not to change as a result of having a new model. So there's a bunch of things that we have to do. Also, we have been asked to explain the latency and throughput. So if you have a REST endpoint and you then do quite a lot of serialization of data, and depending on the frequency of access and the quantity of data, that can be quite onerous and introduce significant latency. That was one of the questions that was raised at the TSC. So as a result of that, we suggested that we would have a core library. So this is the inside the process that is providing a REST endpoint. And that core library, in this case, is written by Java. It doesn't have to be. So for performance reasons, you want to co-deploy your code with the Java core. You will not be using the REST interface, because that way you avoid doing excessive serialization and deserialization of data. So you deploy the CPS as a library together with your application logic, in which case you'll use this Java interface. If you don't deploy it as a library, if your characteristics are such that they're low frequency, low volume, then you can get away with using the REST because latency won't be such a big deal to you. And this particular interface is the internal interface that would be used by any application that wanted to co-deploy with the CPS as a library in order to ensure characteristics or high throughput and high volume data.
Okay, so I understand this is a kind of client library to use CPS, right?
Yes.
And it's one of options, because in case of R apps, I assume that we can connect to a different CPS, because the R apps will have an R1 API. I mean, that it's API that separates ONAP from R apps. So we need an abstract layer.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to jump to a different page to try and show a little bit of that. Okay, so what I'm showing you now is a work in progress. It's not ready for review, but just to try and show context, because I know where the diagram is, I'm going to show you the high level design page. And I've been adding a C4 diagram. So the configuration and persistency service, as been described in our project spec, has got a data access interface, REST. So that's the interface that you're looking for. Okay. And then below that, we have this is a logical view of the CPS as a project. And again, this is very much a work in progress. And here we have, that actually is better without zooming in. Here we have the CPS library that I'm talking about, and it has the interface that I'm talking about here would be the Java interface. And then we have an access library, which is doing, which is exposing the REST interface. So this is what is actually doing the read against the core library, which is then pulling from Postgres, which is pulling Postgres plugin, which is pulling from Postgres. And again, that was just an example. I had to put something in here. It could be MariaDB. We haven't actually decided, but I put something in. So all of these are library components. So here we also have this concept of a mirror service, which we expect to handle the interactions with the XNF data. So it will be cold deployed with the CPS core in order to ensure that we have avoid latency. But there's no reason why something else that doesn't have that latency issue can be sitting outside using this REST access. So both of them are using the same core library. They're just exposed differently in order to handle the different latencies. So this is a work in progress. I'm kind of preempting some of these decisions and discussions. So I hope that helped answer your question, Pavel.
Yes, sure. So if I can assume that all external applications can use the data access REST and that's all, and you have your own library for internal communication, then it's fine.
Yes, and that's I would exactly. Like to,
yeah.
That's exactly correct. That's exactly what okay. I'm trying to get at.
Okay. Okay, so I'm fine with that, and I hope that the data access API will have a high priority to be defined and provided something in a form of Swagger file or something like that.
Yes, it is part of the base scope.
Okay. Yes, great. Thanks.
Okay. So if I come back here, and Ted, you were saying you'd like to understand when docs are read?
Yeah, so if this is basically the internal programming method.
In the Java runtime, and I'm not precluding a Python runtime or a C++ runtime, as long as they can interface with the underlying DBMS, I don't mind.
I suppose what I'm trying to get at is you have to be very, I think this requires a little bit more thought and needs a little bit of integration with the data model, because generally speaking, a container is not a real thing.
You say container, just to be sure I'm understanding you, Ted, you're talking about a Yang container?
Container, yes.
Yeah, okay.
A Yang container is not a real thing.
Yes, it's just a way of collecting things and organizing things.
But the entire hierarchy defined by containers all the way down to leaves and leaf lists are just fancy names.
Yes. Yes and no.
Yes, they are. It's the only time that you come across something that's actually different is whenever you hit a list. And so if you kind of have to be aware of this, whenever you're fetching whenever you're descending into a container, you, first of all, you can just say, get me the such and such container, which is underneath this list, and you should be able to navigate there immediately. And second of all, since these aren't really real things, if you're doing a database fetch every time you're descending into a container, it's going to be wildly inefficient. So if you're navigating among containers and you're not crossing a list boundary, there's nothing real happening. You're just navigating a document or a document fragment. It's only when you cross a list that you kind of have to do something real. Because when you hit a list, you have multiplicity. So it's not just a fancy name. I can try to prepare some PowerPoint slides which describe this, if this is a little strange sounding.
No, I'm trying to internalize what you're saying. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think we need to look at a few more things. Maybe we can't decide this thing in isolation. Maybe we need to look at a few more things, but I do think that I might not be the best at expressing myself, Ted, but I do think I have a reasonably cohesive story here, but you can't, even though I'm trying to take things in isolation, I'm getting the impression I'm not going to be able to, that we're going to have to go back and forth across different aspects of this.
In some sense, I especially if this is something internal, I don't object much, although I think that if you're trying to describe your internal API this way, then you're kind of implicitly saying, I'm going to be storing each container as its own separate thing. Now, a container might not contain any leaves or leaf lists, in which case the container is basically empty, technically speaking. So there's really nothing to fetch. You're just doing a navigation. And when you are...
If you can see that in the model, then you can optimize and not do anything in the database because you know there's going to be nothing to fetch.
Okay,
so we expect to hold on to the information about the Yang model. So when you query a piece of information, we're going to use the Yang model to inform what is actually queried.
Yeah, but can you have an interface where you go directly to a container, to a subcontainer?
Yes.
Yeah. And when you're
and that would be this UUID. So the UUID identifies any given object. So as long as you know the tree, because obviously we have types of X and F, so we could have tens of hundreds or possibly thousands of instances of that tree. So you need to first identify which database or tree that you want, and then within that you should be able to jump directly to the object or the container that you're interested in.
Okay, well, yeah, as long as you don't cross a list boundary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, in this CPS data object, I'm not certain I'm happy with this interface because there's different things that you can fetch. You can fetch a container, which is not a real fetch. You can fetch a leaf, which is a data element. You can fetch a leaf list, which is a vector of data elements, or you can fetch a list, which is a big thing.
Yeah, and that's coming a little bit onto the next. If I can jump to the representation, the data representation, because I think you're going there. But before I go there, Ted, in terms of a document. So if this CPS data object was a document, then your preference would be that the methods were still on the CPS and not on the document. So you wouldn't...
I'm not certain I totally understand the difference here. I see It's just that sometimes I want to navigate a document, and actually there's many libraries out there for document navigation, and sometimes you actually want to fetch something from the database.
Yes, and I'm. I thought I was close to getting you to agree with a little bit there.
But you know, if you're talking about navigating a document, things get a little bit complicated, and I'm not certain I totally like this interface where you just fetch everything which is a child of a parent, because there's many different kinds of things you might be fetching. You might be fetching something.
Yeah, but again, Ted, this is not complete. This is literally pseudocode that is just trying to show one difference. Where does the method to get the root object, to get the children, to get the parents? And there could be any, I'm not saying that get children and get parents are the only methods that we will have. I'm just saying, where do those methods, on what object do those methods exist? Do they exist on the CPS object, or do they exist on the document object? That's all I'm trying to say here, because in an OO world where we highly type these things, it's possible that this CPS data object is a UTRAN cell or a cell object. Why is it double clicking on me? This is a cell object. And then you can get cell relations. So that could be a method on the cell object. So that's taking model driven, that's really highly typing things. And I don't want to go there.
I really don't think that you should be trying to create objects for each thing which might be in a Yang definition.
So we're in agreement.
Yeah.
Okay. So on that one, we said this one doesn't work for us. This is not such a good plan. Because that way.
Yeah. If it's a CPS object, I'm not certain I totally understand this, but if it's a CPS data object in the generic, then that's fine. But if it's a CPS data object, which is strongly typed to the thing that you're fetching, I think that's a terrible approach.
Correct. I agree. So we shouldn't go down that path. Okay. And then the question is, if we have a generic CPS object, do we put the methods, get children, get parent, et cetera, on that data object, or do we leave it on the CPS root object? And I think this lends itself more to an ease of integration with the REST interface. So this is where I want to go. And again, I want to take what's inside this and the structure of this in the next discussion. So I think we're in broad agreement on this one specifically, but not necessarily in terms of what this data object looks like. I think
I think we're in agreement. I'm still not totally comfortable with. How should I put it? I'm not certain why you would want to write a document navigation library when there's so many out there already.
I don't really want to do that, but I'm going to write that down. Why write?
I have one question on that for that. And you said it yourself at the very beginning. I'm a bit worried. If you're talking about documents, they can be enormous. So if you somehow get documents, you need to have some options to limit that. And possibly, and this was a question asked as well, who's consuming this information? In my own experience, I've mainly dealt with a CMCLI and PM. And most of those cases, you're definitely more interested in single objects, maybe with their children, but you very seldomly go much deeper than that. So, yeah, that's the questions I have. How do we limit the size of the document? And I do appreciate there's probably many libraries for easy navigation of these standard documents, but for a performance system where we might get many individual like for instance, trying to think concrete examples, you might want to look at all the cells, but you don't want to get every node that contains those cells every time for that particular use case. You know where I'm coming from, Ted?
So in this thing what we're supposed to be doing backwards compatibility with, I'm I'm sorry, my memory is for names is terrible. But there are other kinds of questions you could ask. You could actually ask essentially a point question. So you could ask, please give me all the cell identifiers underneath a certain point in the tree.
Yeah.
And that actually returns a list of things, which are exactly cell identifiers.
Okay, now we are getting into the data representation discussion.
So I think the one issue is that I think the interface and the data representation are kind of very, very tied together.
Agreed.
And, I think essentially, you know, Twain was saying this also.
Yes.
That sometimes there's a trade-off here where you don't want to be doing a lot of needless fetches, but on the other hand, you don't want to be you don't want to fetch a 10 megabyte tree if you don't if you only need a few kilobytes.
Yes.
Yep.
So this is where we get into
just a quick time check, guys. We have 10 minutes left, and I just want to make sure that if you're planning to hit certain topics that you don't miss them. Just carry on, but you have 10 minutes left.
Okay, thanks for that, Ben. I don't necessarily think that we're going to come to a conclusion on this. I think we moved forward, but I don't think we can take, as I said at the beginning, the interface style in isolation from the data representation, and there's probably some other aspects as well that will come into this. So I just wanted to open up the discussion and make sure that there is at least some semblance of an understanding on this data representation. And again, I put in some simple examples. It's a while since I looked at this. So we're proposing that it's a glorified map, so it's not a document. I do take your point that it could be a document together with the library that allows you to read the document, but that depends exactly on how fast and how you're going to store the data as to what's the most and parse the data when it comes through and what you want to do with that data. So validation and things like that.
And so, by the way, for something like validation, that's one of the points where you actually do kind of want to render it into XML, and then you just let some standard thing do the validation for you.
That can do some of the validation, Ted, but not all of the validation.
Mm-hmm.
So the must clause and the when clause can actually rely on attributes and flags being set in the model. So that kind of validation can only be done against the data.
So, yeah, but render the data into XML.
You were back to, and I don't disagree that, I mean, we're kind of, I don't have a problem with picking, a document navigation library. Mm-hmm. If it turns out that that's what we're doing and these things exist,
the glorified map idea is probably better because it's not exactly because of the issues where you might not want to fetch entire documents. You might not want to cross certain list boundaries. It's not exactly an XML document, unless, of course, you consider the maybe the list is empty, but if the list is empty, that might violate some constraints.
Yeah. So here we have things like getting the tree, and we say, well, okay, there's a level to which we want to return the number of objects, and there's a filter that allows certain things into the return, and so on and so forth. And then we may have specific methods that relate to Yang constructs like refs, parents, children, probably aren't Yang constructs, but you could infer them from this. As you say, here's an example, the container has got bridge, the container is a bridge which has ports, and then the ports are just a list of ports. How we flatten that and how we store that and then how we pull it back And again, I think we should move away from this idea that we have highly typed, so we don't have a bridge class.
Okay, yeah, that's, I think my biggest concern is you just exactly to stay away from this sort of a thing, because it's difficult to write this kind of stuff.
Yes.
And if you're going to write this stuff, use protobuf instead.
Okay. So option A, which is the generic map, or a document library backed by a document, provides a low-cost transformation to and from the REST interface with simple JSON or XML payload, or JSON with the JSON schema, again, to be decided.
I prefer JSON because it's simpler, but I think people might want XML. So I'm neutral on that.
And again, you can have, on your REST endpoint, you can actually say that you can understand both. And then internally, they're not that hard to play around with. So again, I think we're moving towards option A, but I do think the two are very tightly related, both the data representation and the interface style. So maybe if we come back and if people have more questions next week, we can talk about it a little bit more. But in general, I think that for the... It's option A for the data representation. So basically a glorified map, possibly backed by a document navigation library.
Yeah.
And then for the interface style, I think we were also in agreement that option B for the access methods, the methods would be associated with the CPS object and not with the objects themselves, because this is leading us down a dark path. It more goes with option B. So option, they probably, the numbers went a little bit funny, but I think my preferred approach is option B for the interface style. Because again, this plays nice with REST. It maps nicely, because the REST endpoints will be against the CPS object, and then we'll have a few methods on that. And then most of the structure will be in the JSON object, the document. And then the data representation side of things will stick. So I think we'll ratify this next week, but we'll stick again with the generic objects, the glorified map approach, as qualified by possibly the implementation of that being a standard document navigation library.
Yeah, for my side, these two choices make sense, and I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll
Antonio,
just... go ahead.
Just one question, because we are running out of time. Maybe it's not... fully related to the question, but to this topic. But I have a question: whether it's still valid that the service, the CPS service, will provide the PMF FM data? I mean, the VES event stored, and it will store the PMF and FM data from RAN, for example.
Yep, and my answer to that is the same as before. As long as you can define the data that you want to store in a Yang model, mm-hmm. and then you provide that Yang model through the model lifecycle interfaces as an application to the configuration and persistency store, then you should be able to read and write that data through the data access interface. So as long as you can give it a model, then you can store the data and read the data. That is the general pattern. Our primary focus has to be on configuration data from XNF. That's for the proof of concept, but because this is a model-driven proof of concept, these two interfaces are critical to the proof of concept, that as any model that you drop in, you should then be able to store and retrieve data, store, validate, and retrieve data.
What about the opposite? Let's say, could the Yang model being optional? And let's say if you don't have, you still would be able to read and write some data even without model?
I don't think so, but we can discuss that one, Bruno. I can't see any reason why you would be allowed to do that.
Yeah, but just a question, wondering. But yeah, sure.
I would imagine that would bring a layer of complexity that is probably not warranted, but we can discuss it more as to why you would need to do that. But my gut instinct is no, if you don't have a model, you cannot store data. Okay, so we're pretty much out of time. So I think we can bring this back next week for ratification and see if anybody has any objections after thinking about it for a week.
Just in the last negative 10 seconds here, can I just share really quick?
Yep, I'll stop sharing. Go ahead.
All right. I just wanted to, just as we close, this is our use case page, and I've made some updates for the stuff we needed to fill in, right? So I added some pictures, and then also we were talking at the beginning of the call about the use case functional description. So
okay, just have populated it.
Yeah, just have a look at this. It talks about the description of it and if I miss somebody, add yourself, some preconditions, triggers, the steps and flows, post conditions, and these are kind of the error cases and stuff. I didn't fill in the assumptions and artifacts yet, but if you have any comments, yeah, of course, you feel free to update anything or send an email and I can update it. We may not have our agendas are so packed week to week, we may not have time to actually go line by line through this, but a lot of this is also in from our project page. So it's already been reviewed together as a team for the most part. And just some stuff here is not exactly in the, it's not in the project page at all. Maybe we should edit. But it just sort of describes, setup and flows and stuff. Okay, but anyway, take a look and let me know what you think and you can update. Okay, great. So we'll continue next week with where we were with the investigation of the POC. I think it was very productive today. Thanks, Tony and Toyn, for leading the conversation.
And thanks, Bruno, Ted, and...
yeah, a lot of great discussion. Yeah,
Pavel as well for contributing to that discussion. It was
right,
very good.
Right, right. Okay, great. Let's stop here. All right. Thank you, everybody, for attending the meeting. I'll let you get on to your next call. Thanks. Bye. Okay,
thanks.
Thanks all. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.